This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Democrat Party is the largest, most powerful criminal organization there has ever been on planet Earth.
California has just a crazy out-of-compliance situation where there are millions of people on the voter roll. It needs to get cleaned up because we're turning into a third-world country in some places in this country.
Things seem like they're getting better to me. Are they? Every now and then, we've had to stop before. You got to stop and smell the roses. Because here's what happens. When things go your way, when things are going well, it is human nature to take it for granted. It just is. We're all guilty of this from time to time. When your job is going well, maybe you just got promoted. It's been good for a while. Solid employment, not fired. How often do you wake up and say, I'm so grateful I have a job. I get to go to work today. Do you say that? No, we complain. Ah, man, I got to go to work. And then your marriage is going well. It's been going well for 10 years. How often are you grateful for it? No, you take it for granted. In politics, we take it for granted when things are going our way. And we forget very quickly. I do too. We forget very quickly how horrible it is when the communists are in power. I understand that the Trump administration is a year and a half in at this point in time. And after a year and a half, you no doubt have some complaints. If you don't, I would probably question you. You should have some complaints, every administration, because nobody's perfect. Right? You should have some things. I wish you'd do this or wouldn't do that. And you should have some complaints, and that's fine. Complain, that's fine. But I do think it pays now and then to look back and remember. For instance, immigration. Do you remember when this gentleman was the head of the Department of Homeland Security?
The answer is quite clear and quite straightforward, and we've been waiting for it for about 30 years, and that is to fix a system that everyone agrees is fundamentally broken, and we need congressional action, both for the lawful pathways that really need to be more robust in statute, and for the 12 million people who are here in the United States who have been contributing so fundamentally to our country's well-being.
The head of DHS was promoting amnesty. He opened up the border on purpose. He used your tax money to create a phone app so foreigners could schedule their invasion into your country. Once they got them here, they flew them all over the country and gave some of them mortgages. That was like 15 minutes ago. We had a deeply evil communist administration in this country. I'm pretty happy with my vote. Oh, I've got complaints, I've told you before, but I'm pretty happy with my vote. And I think also we need to remember that the communists are not sorry for what they did on things like immigration. Donald Trump came in. Donald Trump sealed the border. Donald Trump is deporting people. You can argue not as many as he should, but he is deporting people. And we just had a report out that says the Trump administration is denaturalizing citizens. Now, you can look at the report and say, well, it's only 17. We've got about another million to go. And that may be true. But when is the last administration you remember that denaturalized anybody? Forever, immigration into this country has been a one-way street. Every foreigner around the globe can skip across the border and end up signing up for welfare and build a house and just plant roots here. When's the last time you remember an administration telling them, you know what? No, you've done wrong. Get out. We're getting some of that now. That's what we get now. What will we get if communists come back to power? Here's the mayor of New York City.
What do you say to people who say language, and there's Democrats in D.C. who say language like abolish ICE or unhelpful for the political health of the Democratic Party?
I think if we've listened to them before and look where we are.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's time to develop a new vision for this party, one that is unflinching in its beliefs and also uncompromising in its principles.
They're not sorry. They're not looking back at what happened under Joe Biden and saying to themselves, shouldn't have done that. Oops. Hey, we'll do different next time. Full speed ahead for that. Let's acknowledge we're doing all right. Democrats handed this country to foreigners as fast as they possibly could. Remember that report we talked about already? The government shut down your country over a bad chest cold, and then 90% of the post-COVID jobs went to foreigners. They took away your job, destroyed your livelihood, and handed what was left of it to a foreigner, and they did it all on purpose. That's how evil the Democrat administration was. We're not there anymore. Let's talk about fraud. The Democrat Party is the largest, most powerful criminal organization there has ever been on planet Earth because they use the federal government of the United States, state governments, and local governments to facilitate their crimes. All this fraud you see across the United States of America, virtually all of it is done, and it's aided and abetted by elected Democrats who want these filthy criminals in our society because they vote the right way, so they help them loot your taxpayer money. When's the last major effort you remember of the federal government cracking down on fraud, cracking down on people stealing from you? Well, we have it right now.
We actually referred this particular case to the Department of Justice for a full criminal investigation. We are not going to do what the Biden administration did and make judgments of the law before all the facts are in. But here's what's particularly troubling about this to me is Jesse, you had people within Governor Waltz's office who were saying, you know what, this looks like fraud. It looks like these Somalian illegal immigrants are doing something that's very shady. And then you had people who shut them down, who shut these whistleblowers down and said, you know, you're a racist or you're a xenophobe for asking questions about where taxpayer money is going. What that means to me, Jesse, is that clearly people weren't taking fraud seriously. Whether it rises to the level of a criminal violation, we're going to investigate it. And of course, if it does rise to that level, we're going to prosecute it. We have to.
Have you seen the Assistant Attorney General and what he said? Before I play it, remember that under the communists in the Biden administration, if you were, for instance, a pro-lifer who maybe read some Bible verses or sung some worship songs at an abortion clinic, you had to lay awake at night with the knowledge that a SWAT team might be kicking down your door and sticking a gun in your face at any moment to throw you in prison for your crimes. Guess who's worried now?
So you have a lot of fraudsters who have, for many years, been enjoying the darkness and being able to steal from the American people in the dark. No visibility, and funding their very lavish lifestyles. So they do not feel the concern that a prosecutor might be knocking on their door or a federal agent might be knocking on their door at 6 a.m. the next morning. That's what I want to change. I want to change that whole dynamic such that if you're a fraudster and you go to bed tonight, you are worried that you are going to get a knock on your door at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. And if you make it to 6:30 tomorrow morning, you should say a prayer because you've got another day. But guess what? You got to go to bed that night worried about 6 o'clock the next morning. That's what I want. I want fraudsters worried about 6 o'clock.
That's awesome. That's what I want. People who steal from you, people who steal from me, I want them to be afraid. And finally, remember how gay everything was when they were in charge? Everything had to be gay. White House is gay, gay this, gay that. Even the freaking Pentagon, gay.
LGBTQ plus rights are human rights. We, again, back to the earlier question, are never going to shy away, be bashful about speaking up for those rights and for individuals to live as they deem fit, as they want to live. And that's something that's a core part of our foreign policy, and it will remain so.
A core part of our foreign policy. Jeez. Things are better now. Stop and smell the roses every now and then. Speaking of which, Harmeet Dhillon is now at the DOJ. The animals are gone and Harmeet is there. We'll talk to Harmeet about some good things they're doing in a moment. Before we do that, America's corporations are still trying to hand your job to foreigners. Did you know that? Your mobile provider, last time you had to get a hold of them, who were you talking to on the phone? Did they sound like they were right up the street from you? No, it was a call center from India. You know that's true. Not my company. I have PureTalk. I saved a fortune when I switched from T-Mobile. They have incredible plans now. We're talking unlimited data on their 5G network for $34.99 a month. They're led by a Vietnam veteran. And maybe most importantly, PureTalk hires Americans. When you get a hold of somebody at PureTalk, they'll make it easy. You keep your phone, you keep your number, and you'll get to speak to an American who's nice. And they answer your questions. They're not trying to run you off the phone like you're some kind of a cancer. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV and make the switch. puretalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, along the same lines of what we were just talking about not regretting my vote, the DOJ, I want you to remember where we were just a short time ago. They were arresting pro-lifers. They dug up an old obscure FACE Act and they were tracking down pastors and trying to throw them in prison. That's where we were. We're not there anymore. I'm very grateful for people like Harmeet Dhillon, Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights at the DOJ. Harmeet, what are you guys doing now since you have free time and not arresting pro-lifers?
Well, thank you, Jesse, for your kind words, and thanks for having us. We've been actually extremely busy at the Civil Rights Division with an affirmative pro-MAGA agenda over here that's pro-all Americans. And we're just busier than one-armed paper hangers. We've got new projects, and I'll tell you about some of them. And we're doing it with half the staff that we had when I first was nominated by the president. And so we're staffing up, and so the good news is there'll be more of this coming. But let's talk about some of the cases this week. So we opened up investigations yesterday into four California school districts. Now, California, like other states, requires opt-outs for sexually sort of charged educational topics, but they've specifically exempted sexual orientation and gender identity from the disclosures required for parents. And so parents are not notified about this sexually charged information that's being forced on children. And they're not allowed to opt out of it. And we believe that's at odds with Supreme Court precedents, Mirabilli and Mahmoud. And we have opened this investigation. And I believe this is happening in other places in the country as well. But we're starting with these four school districts, including San Francisco. And we want to make sure that parental and children's rights are protected because obviously the parents have the paramount authority to direct their children's education, especially on these sensitive topics that may implicate religion and, you know, cultural values. So I'm really proud of that. You're seeing our continued effort now, more than 1 year in, to attack DEI wherever we can find it. That's in the employment setting and government contracting, but also in higher education. And so we've opened up new investigations and new lawsuits in that regard. And we are now up to 30 of the nation's top medical schools that we're investigating for continuing to flout potentially the requirements of Students for Fair Admissions, the Supreme Court case that says that admissions have to be fair and they can't use sort of paint by numbers to manipulate the content of their classes. And look, I don't know how you feel about it, but it's one thing if your lawyer is woke or if your basket weaving instructor is woke, but what you really don't want is a physician who got their position by woke criteria. We need the best and brightest to be taking care of our medical health in this country, and that's frankly not happening. And so we're really concerned about that. That's a really big impetus that we're working on. And I'll pause and let you ask about any of those. I can talk about Second Amendment and other issues we're working on as well.
Yeah, I'll actually get to those in a few. I want to focus on this medical aspect of it, because honestly, Armin, you just touched on it. It's one of those things that scares me the most, because we are all sadly going to need medical care one day if we don't get splattered on the highway or something like that first. And the thought that you're going to have an inept doctor standing over you with a scalpel because they were a diversity hire is just frightening. And I would think it would be frightening to everybody. Why isn't it?
The reason is that many people in America, good, well-meaning people, have been indoctrinated first into this concept that America needs to atone constantly for a racist history that's way in the past. And there have been times in our history where that was necessary at the outset of the Civil Rights Act and so forth. And I just don't think that's the case today. And then there's this concept that is based on flawed data that somehow minority populations do better and are treated better by minority doctors from their communities. And therefore, there's a medical justification for manipulating admissions criteria to admit doctors that, quote unquote, reflect the population. I personally have seen a lot of doctors in my life. I never really cared what color they were. I just cared whether they can do the job correctly and relate to me as a patient, listen to me, and give me correct outcomes. And I think all of us are entitled to that. And frankly, the medical industry has had this cartel here in the United States where we don't even graduate enough American educated doctors. And so there's an acute problem. And if you're giving away half the slots to people who are not in the top competition-wise in terms of their academics, you're artificially degrading the quality of American medical treatment for no good policy reason. And so again, not to mention it's at odds with every individual's right to be considered equally without regard to their race. We are supposed to have a colorblind constitution and a colorblind society in 2026, and we don't have it. And, you know, there's just disturbing stuff constantly coming out of schools. Even as I reach settlements with some of these institutions, we find out that in other institutions, they say they've gotten rid of DEI and they haven't. But nowhere is this problem more acute, both in terms of the resistance to our removal of DEI, but also in terms of the outcomes to our society than the medical school setting. So that's really important to us.
I mean, I don't know what you're at liberty to discuss or not discuss, so you're welcome to tell me to go pound sand. But when you say you're looking at 30 institutions, medical institutions, surely these are bottom of the barrel medical institutions, right? I don't want to sit and think that the top medical institutions in the country would be doing this stuff, right?
You would be wrong. We are absolutely looking at the top tier medical institutions because that's how you have to do it. We are hoping to do these investigations and then have these have sort of a trickle down effect with that.
Okay, all right. Let's go here then. You say they're in defiance of the law. They appear to be in defiance of the law. Obviously, that's going to get hashed out. But how do we handle this as a society or as a Justice Department if we have universities willing to simply defy the law? The law says this, Supreme Court says that, and you know, Harvard, I'm just using that as an example, placeholder here, says, nah, I don't feel like it. We'll dance around it. How do we punish them? That can't happen.
Well, once we have investigations concluded, we then go forward and we start a process of stopping funding because it's inconsistent with our federal laws to it's inconsistent with federal law to have these types of situations where people are taking federal funding and they are violating federal law. That's illegal. And so there are all the grants that all these institutions get, they incorporate requirements that each of these schools certify that they're complying with federal law. Federal law today says you can't discriminate on the basis of race in admissions and hiring and otherwise.
Armin, talk to me about the Second Amendment things you brought up.
Okay, so Second Amendment is really important to us. We have a number of investigations going on in different jurisdictions concerning Second Amendment issues, and they include suing California and Los Angeles Sheriff's Department specifically for violating the rights of citizens under Bruin to be able to obtain concealed carry weapons permits rapidly. We also have investigations undergoing and litigation undergoing in Denver, Colorado, and Colorado itself for their so-called magazine bans that they say are large capacity magazines. They're standard capacity magazines. And in the case of Denver, they have a categorical ban on so-called assault weapons, which are the most commonly used assault, you know, sort of semi-automatic rifles in the United States. They're banned in Denver, which is, again, unconstitutional under Supreme Court precedent. We filed amicus briefs in Hawaii in the Walford case that involves these so-called, you know, vampire laws, where there's a presumption that you have to get permission from the government or from the private property to be able to cross a piece of property with your firearm, as opposed to the standard property law presumption that you're entitled to do that absent some kind of warning to the contrary. We've given notice to Virginia that we are going to be taking action against Virginia if Virginia, Virginia has passed the laws that we believe their whole slew of these laws that violate the Constitution. They're going to go into effect at the beginning of the following month. And so that's when DOJ is going to be looking at taking action. And then Virgin Islands comes to mind. Virgin Islands is simply ignoring the Bruin decision and not having a shall issue regimen for these firearms. And so that is something that we're looking at, and we're in active litigation in the Virgin Islands. And I will tell you, we have a number of other potential lawsuits teed up. We're just, you know, going through our due diligence process one by one, and then we're taking them on. We'd like to ultimately get some more clear rulings from the Supreme Court on some of these issues. In the District of Columbia as well, we've sued to challenge the so-called assault weapons ban, and now we've added suppressors to our list of targets, and law-abiding citizens should be able to have these lawful firearms, and they're banned in these jurisdictions. And so we're standing up for the rights of all citizens who want to enjoy their full panoply of federal rights.
Armeet, are you guys by chance looking for anyone to go back and forth to the Virgin Islands to, you know, represent you down there? Because, I mean, I'm available.
Well, I think we're covered in the Virgin Islands, but there are some other far-flung destinations that are ignoring the law, and we will be going after them in due course.
Okay. Well, just let me know if they're tropical. All right, Armeet, I can't let you go without asking about the voter rolls. Obviously, we have recent elections. Everyone's talking about it, but it's a much deeper, much bigger problem. What have you found so far?
So in the voter roll litigation, we are having about a third of the states have complied with us voluntarily, and we're finding a lot of dead people and a lot of non-citizens on the voter rolls. Those are the ones who are complying with us, who are giving us that information. And then we're in litigation, and you know, California comes to mind. California has just a crazy out-of-compliance situation where there are millions of people on the voter rolls, and admittedly, in Los Angeles County in a 2017 litigation, they admitted there were over a million people on the voter rolls there who don't belong on the voter rolls, dead, moved, et cetera. Recent investigations have shown how shady it is over there because Congress and the Senate are not passing legislation that cuts off the time that ballots can be received and counted. You know, there's uncertainty around that. We've made the argument to the high court that it is inconsistent with federal law to allow ballots to be counted after Election Day. And, you know, that's continuing to happen in the current elections for a mayor in Los Angeles and other cases in California. And so it's the states that have the most to hide that are the ones that are the most resistant to giving us their voter rolls and helping us help all Americans have more confidence in our voter rolls. And you have to think that that's by it's sort of a feature, not a bug, that they have these dirty voter rolls. They allow homeless people to you know, be used as a form of human trafficking, really, to traffic ballots in these jurisdictions. It's been seen on video. It's really hard to dispute that. And it needs to get cleaned up because we're turning into a third world country in some places in this country.
You sure are. Armeet, thank you. Appreciate you, as always.
Thanks for having me.
Senator Ron Johnson's going to join us next. He's out on quite a few things. Before we get to him, let me tell you something that I think it's going to be music to your ears. High interest debt doesn't have to be permanent. If you have a mortgage and you're carrying around this high interest debt, 20, 30% debt, weighing you down like an elephant on your back, American Financing is here to take that elephant off your back. This is what they do, creating paths forward for people so you're not stuck making the bare minimum interest payments from now till the end of time. Don't think that it's permanent. Don't think that you're drowning. There is a way out, and American Financing is that way. Go to AmericanFinancing.net/Jesse and find out today. We'll be back. All right. Well, I hate to be Mr. Optimism, but honestly, I see a lot of great things happening out there right now. I know you're upset about things like the SAVE Act not getting through. We just had four Republican senators join to stop it. I know all that, but I think even the Senate is getting better, that we're getting rid of some of the old garbage and getting some new people in who are actually really decent. Joining me now, one of the best people we have in the Senate, Senator Ron Johnson. Gosh, I hope he never retires. Senator from Wisconsin. Senator, I know you were frustrated, which you expressed to us multiple times on this show, but things seem like they're getting better to me. Are they?
You're getting the spot here. I'm not exactly the world's greatest optimist because we're dealing with all these problems. Certainly we have the prospect in terms of President Trump's action in Venezuela. That's a better situation. If he succeeds in Iran, I mean, that will literally change geopolitics. That would be a very positive thing. And the war in Iran, oil prices will definitely come down because we're energy independent. Yeah, there's a lot of things we should be thankful for. Yeah, I just had a bunch of college kids in here. I point out to them, you are so lucky to be born in the greatest period of human history. Nobody in the span of human history has lived in such an affluent and quite honestly, in America, peaceful society. Now, there's war around the world, but we're insulated from it. So, you know, be thankful for that, but jealously guard your freedom. That's what I get pessimistic about, is we have so many of our fellow citizens who are willing to vote away their freedom, continue to grow government, continue to indebt our children, grandchildren, you know, put them in bondage. So again, when you're always grappling with these issues, the corruption I see in government, the corruption I'm exposing, sometimes hard to be optimistic, but there's no doubt about it, Jesse. We are so fortunate to live in these times, to live in this country, the greatest, the freest country with the most opportunity. I just hope more of our fellow citizens understand that and take advantage of that opportunity as opposed to grow government and beg for benefits. And that's my biggest concern, is the growing dependency. What, 20% of working age men are permanently out of the workforce? That's certainly not a good sign. And we encourage them to be dependent.
Senator, what's the parliamentarian? Most normal people don't even know who this person is, but you have people like the president railing against this person. What do they do? Who is this?
Well, they're the ones that kind of enforce our rules, to take a look at presidents, take a look at what the rules of the Senate are, and enforce them. And honestly, from my standpoint, the parliamentarian has been relatively even-handed. She sometimes gets pushed in one direction versus the other, but she's not the problem. The problem is the 60-vote threshold. And again, if we're in less divided times where you actually had people good faith working with each other, you can make a good case and know there should be a 60-vote threshold. The reason I now, and I will say reluctantly, support ending it is I know Democrats will. Have they shown us their hand, even though like 35 of them joined a letter a couple of years before they voted to end it, pledging they wouldn't end it, and then they did. They purged the two members of their party who prevent them from ending the filibuster when they have the opportunity. They've been purged. So my strong belief is when Democrats are the White House, House and Senate, they'll end the filibuster. They'll turn D.C., Puerto Rico into states. That's four more Democrat senators. They'll pack the Supreme Court. They will nationalize the elections. That means automatic registration, all mail-in balloting. We can see the harm, the lack of integrity in that kind of voting system. But again, that's Democrats want to turn America into one-party nation. We understand that. They will never vote for any voter integrity. I mean, we didn't pass the Save America Act because Democrats don't support it. We have no Democrat support for that whatsoever. So again, they're the problem. That we need to focus our angst and our anger and frustration on Democrats. They're the people that will destroy this country if they have the chance.
You have been, and I'm grateful for this, all over the post-COVID stuff. So many people just want to move on, and I'm sure that's because there's so much guilt that is spread around to so many people. But you have not moved on, and there are very real victims here who have been harmed in very real ways. What's the latest on this stuff?
Well, again, I just met with one of the main groups of the injection injured. Psychologically, they're at a low point. They're experiencing more suicides within their ranks because they've been fighting this. They've been fighting for recognition. All they want is to be seen, heard, and believed so they can be treated. The fact that our federal health officials, the doctors, the medical establishment, members of Congress haven't acknowledged that these injection injuries are severe and real, and there's a lot of them, it puts them into despair. They deserve treatment. They need treatment. And here's what's really sick. You know, my report showed that by March 1st of 2021, the head of the FDA, the group that approves vaccines and is supposed to surveil for safety signals, was warned that their algorithm that analyzed VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, was going to hide and mask safety signals. 26 days later, they were showing the safety signals using a new system. They told that woman to cease and desist, quit showing us the stuff. And they continued to use that one algorithm, and they continued to lie to the American public. And the reason that is significant is that people made decisions based on their lies. Remember, Biden's out there going, this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Get your child vaccinated so they don't infect their grandparents, and so their grandparents don't die. All of that was a lie. And so parents had their children injected based on the lie that these were safe and effective, that vaccine injuries, that injection injuries were rare and mild, and their children died. Now the FDA is acknowledging children died from the injection. How many deaths could have been prevented? How many permanent disabilities could have been prevented if only Americans in the world population would have known the truth that these things were not risk-free, that they might have saved lives? I don't deny that's a possibility. But what is indisputable, irrefutable, is that these injections caused death, they caused permanent disability, and they did that at a massive scale. And the fact that the legacy media is not covering it, the fact that these folks are still struggling just to be recognized, give them an ICD code so doctors treating them can get reimbursed. It's again, they are in despair and they're committing suicide probably at record rates. It's troubling. It's gross. Yeah.
That is so unimaginably sad. Senator, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Please come back soon. Appreciate it. Yeah, I wonder why the media is not covering it. I don't know about you. I remember all those ads. Remember all those commercials during COVID? Wonder why the media is not going to reach out and cover people who've been harmed, had loved ones harmed, killed because of all this, and the government told you to take it. What a freaking disgrace that is. I'm not here to promise you that we're ever going to get true justice. I am grateful we have some people like Ron Johnson who are there at least attempting to get us something. I'll tell you what I'm grateful for. I'm grateful that COVID led me to chalk. Did you know that's how I discovered chalk? I was out there railing against all this idiocy, the lockdowns and all this crazy stuff. And there's this company, Natural Herbal Supplements, hardcore anti-communists. They were doing the same thing. They were getting themselves run off of social media because they were loudly saying, we should be free. There are other ways. And it's been a match made in heaven ever since. I would highly recommend you start taking some natural herbal supplements from CHOP to make your life better. Maybe even keep you from having to go to the doctor. I personally, if you want to know, I take a male vitality stack. I've been taking one for 4 years. My T levels are through the roof. My energy is through the roof. I just feel fantastic without needles jammed in my arm. There are female vitality stacks. There's chocolate powder. Go to chalk.com/JesseTV and find out what they can do for you. Whatever you're looking for, Chalk has something. Natural herbal supplements. chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
I won an election in a landslide. and I got 94% bad press.
But, Mr. President,
you know why I got that? Because you have no credibility.
But you've never presented evidence that it was rigged. Let's keep talking about. I want to talk about Todd.
You have more evidence. There's more evidence than ever presented.
Let's talk
about your elections in this country. We're like a third world country. Your elections are crooked. And you crooked, and Meet the Press is crooked, and so is ABC, and CBS, and CNN.
But, Mr. President,
you're one-sided crooked networks. All right, let's call it quits, because I've had enough. Thank you, darling. Have a good time.
Mr. President, let's please, I traveled all the way to Wisconsin.
I've sat in the rain for an hour. On and off in the rain, and I've given you enough time. You ought to straighten out your press, because you know what?
Mr. President,
a country can never be great with a dishonest
press. Listen, we traveled all the way to Wisconsin for the Senate deal.
I don't know what part of that I love the most. I think the best part is she couldn't, it seeped out of her there. I traveled all the way to Wisconsin. She almost just added a blah. I have to spend time with these people joining me now. The great Curtis Hauck, managing editor at Newsbusters. Curtis, she traveled all the way to mingle with the peasants in Wisconsin.
Oh, she had to travel to another time zone, Jesse, that wasn't like the one to the south of France or something. Oh, 50 minutes that she gave him, reportedly, before things derailed. Oh, my gosh. Oh, no, this is so terrible. Mainstream journalists need 70 minutes or it doesn't count. I mean, think how insanely out of touch you have to be to actually think this was terrible. And she actually wore the high heels there to sit in a barn with the perfectly manicured bales of hay sitting around them. I mean, what a joke. I mean, everything about this, you know, yeah, I don't know. I'm like you. I don't know whether to think this was fun, disaster, funny. I'm not sure what to make of it because it was quintessential Trump. And at the end, he was like, bye, darling. Have a great time. Have a good time. And he, like, taps her on the shoulder as he walks off. I mean, this interview literally had everything. And then on the substance of it, Jesse, of course, it was Kristen Welker basically saying, shut up. Stop asking questions about what's going on in Los Angeles. Never mind. You know, just, this is ridiculous that you're even mentioning or even complaining about this. You should be happy about this. And said the president threw it right back at her.
Curtis, Kristen Welker has been obviously working on behalf of one side for a long time. She has a long history of it. Here's an older clip of her running cover for the Bidens.
Well, of course, there's no evidence that the president has any link to his son's business dealings. Let me ask you, though,
He called in. You mean he called in all these meetings? He was calling in on the meetings. He was put on speakerphone and every single day.
Mr. President, the witness who testified, though, said that he never heard any discussion of business when President Biden was put on the phone.
You saw the prosecutor thing on television because I saw it on your network. He said, you don't get rid of this prosecutor. I'm not giving $1 billion.
That was looked into as well. And as you know, there was
There's no evidence, Curtis. So I guess my question is two parts here. The no evidence thing is clearly something they run with when they're caught doing something bad. But why does Trump, he's certainly not an idiot or a fool, why does he keep sitting down for these interviews with the enemy?
Well, yeah, I mean, the first part of that question, obviously, it's fun. Hunter Biden just flies on Air Force Two all around the world with Joe, and he didn't ask him, son, why are you flying with me? What are you up to on this trip? Of course, there was things going on there. I mean, it's preposterous for Kristen Welker, and she knew it. I believe she has some family ties to Democratic Party politics in Philadelphia, so it's in her DNA. As for why the president does this, you know, Jesse, I think it's honestly because he enjoys this kind of thing. I mean, the highfalutin, you know, serious answer is because he's trying to appeal to all Americans. He wants to get out there. He wants to be shown that he's fighting because he knows, you know, how close these elections can be. But I also think, too, it's because he enjoys it.
All right, Curtis, let's go to the man who's all over the news now that he's been fired from the news, Scott Pelley. I thought this was something. Here he was.
Barry Weiss sends an email to my boss, Tanya Simon. Two of the things in the email include, can we make the protesters look more violent? Now, I'm paraphrasing. I don't have the quote, but that's what was communicated to me. And the other thing was Renee Good's car. You need to describe her as driving toward the officer. This is not what you see on the video. We had already scrubbed the video archives looking for those scenes. But it somehow wasn't enough for Ms. Weiss. The video showed that the officer wasn't standing in front of the car and she wasn't driving toward him, but that's what the president said about that, and that's the way she wanted it described.
Curtis,
yeah,
she ran into the officer with such force he was hospitalized for internal injuries. That's not an opinion. It's not a left or right-wing opinion. In fact, there is video. We can watch it. Why can't Scott Pelley see it, or can he, and he's just a liar?
Yeah, he was knocked on his tail. I mean, it's ridiculous to say, oh, she didn't drive, she didn't hit him, when, you know, if that was the case, then the officer would not have gone to the hospital. It's one of those yes or no questions, Jesse, that these liberal elite journalists just absolutely refuse to answer, and I'm glad you played that clip, because that one ties in so well with the other ones of Pelley crying and acting like he's Jim Acosta and Brian Williams all rolled into one here, because it just goes to show that the pomposity goes along with just the horrific mangling disregard for facts in all of this. And I think you can't ignore the other if you talk about one, just the sheer self-immolation that this guy has undergone when, you know, his friends think he's the hero of the story and he thinks he's the hero of his own story, but also he was putting out something in there that is just outright false. And he then goes on to say that Barry Weiss's requests here are putting the thumb on the scale for the administration. I mean, when you're at a point where, oh, we can't acknowledge facts because that benefits the president, you've lost the plot.
Curtis, it seems like these people think that journalism really should simply work for Democrats and against Republicans. I think when guys like Scott Pelley claim that he's not biased, honestly, I think if you hooked him up to a lie detector test, I think he would pass. I don't think he sees himself as biased. I think that's how he sees the role of the press. You should defend Democrats. You should destroy Republicans. Am I crazy?
No, and I mean, this goes to my point, too, about, you know, his team and he himself is the hero of every story. There's always good guys and there's bad guys. I mean, this is the same thing you see every night on CNN with Abby Phillip, as Red Sea says, Joy Reid with an inside voice. There's heroes and there's villains. It's very clear, and we must do everything we can to help the heroes in the story, because not only are they good guys, they have the facts on their side. And the villains, they do not, and we must do everything we can to crush them. Never mind that tens of millions of people belong to this one side. We must crush them. We must treat them not like they are human. We must disrespect them. We must throw them in jail. We must throw and engage in all sorts of lawfare against them. I think that's absolutely right, because they say, you know, truth is not objective. Well, yes, but they confuse what truth and facts and all those things actually mean, because it's entirely hell-bent on their agenda. It's not about serving the people, because we are subservient to them, because we are supposed to respect and adore them. You know, like, because as Scott Pelley said, there's no democracy without journalism. So there's this country wouldn't exist with people like him.
All right, final one from me. Why'd Politico shut down their climate news site? There was so much great information there.
I know. It's so sad, Jesse. Where are we going to go for the articles laundered through hopeless publicists for all sorts of climate groups? E&E was its shortcut. I mean, what in the world is that, Dave? I feel like when the president heard a question from that notice place, he's like, I don't even know what that is. You should go get a real job at a real news outlet or a real place. I did a story a few months ago showing that they, with Politico's E&E, coordinated with the Biden EPA to try and get talkers out in articles about what was Kamala Harris's role in the Biden EPA agenda to try and prop Kamala up once she became the nominee. And the emails through FOIA requests that I received showed all sorts of very flattery and just kind of sort of, let us help you along. Let us hold your hand and walk you through this, which, again, to tie to Scott Pelley, is very similar to how Scott Pelley's interviews with Joe Biden were. It was, you know, let me tell you, he stutters a lot when he's really tired and when he's working hard. So I'm going to tell him everything's great.
I forgot about the stutter. Curtis, thank you, brother. Come back. I appreciate it. Lighten the mood. Next. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And I warned for a long time that Democrats hitching their wagon to the tranny madness was a horrible mistake. It's not that it's just sick and gross and evil and wrong. It's a political loser. It takes things too far. It grosses normal people out. It scares them. They don't like it. But because Democrats feel like they have to go all in on demonic stuff at all times, they decided to wrap their arms around it and carry water for it. This kind of stuff?
My name is Beth, and I'm running for Congress in the Massachusetts 6th Congressional District. After Trump was elected, my representative, Seth Moulton, tried to throw trans kids under the bus for his political career. And that's why I stepped up to challenge him. Trans people aren't political props, and slapping a rainbow on a bomb isn't support. Congress needs to take real action.
They're not going to get out of this now. Now they're one. I'll see them all.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.